Welcome to Is This Scary?
This is Phil.
This is Zach.
This is Shelby. And Merry Christmas, everybody. And Happy Kwanzaa and Happy Hanukkah as well. This is our Christmas special. And we are talking about Gremlins, released in 1984, directed by...
Joe Dante.
Woo!
Written by Chris Columbus.
So if for anyone keeping score... Directed by the guy that did The Howling and written by the guy that did Home Alone.
Also with the help of Steven Spielberg.
He was the executive producer.
Yeah. This is a, I tell you one thing, going into the background of this movie, which I think I'll focus a lot on this episode about, this movie has got a lot of layers to it, and it's got a lot of like interesting backstory behind it, and it's like they don't talk about this movie. I feel like this movie gets, even though it's got great in regards to how much money this thing made in the box office,
it had no right to make the money it made.
It
was done on a budget of $11 million. Profited $212.9 million,
And it was going against Ghostbusters and held its own. And I feel
it came in at a respectable second that opening weekend. So yeah.
And this is a movie where I feel a lot of people are like, Gremlins, what is that B movie creature feature?
Not even.
And it's just like, no, this
movie. Do you not know who's the people that are involved with this are all top notch talents.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And what, this was one of the first movies that Chris Columbus ever wrote. And I think The Howling got decent. The Howling got decent attention. So this is Joe Dante's second big movie.
Right.
I won't lie, I liked how you described the writing process for this movie. Just wanted to prove I could do it.
Yeah.
And they made me do it.
Well, so we can just do background first. We'll just mix it up this episode. Why not? No, I did a lot of background research on it too. And one of the things I really liked about it was Chris Columbus was... He'd been in the industry for a while, but he'd never... fully written a script by himself, and he wanted to prove that he could do it, so he wrote an R-rated cut of this movie, and that was the original script.
Yeah.
Like, it was a lot more violent. There were on-screen decapitations. There was blood and guts everywhere.
Yeah, they cut out a lot in this movie.
And then, actually, what's interesting is Steven Spielberg got a hold of it, and he read this script, and he's like, okay, we need to make this movie. But we have to make it producible because there's no way that this movie can get made right now. And so they PG'd it up. And what's interesting is even though he wanted to PG it up, he went and found a horror director in Joe Dante, because it was Steven Spielberg also pulled Dante in. He was like, hey, you can do that horror comedy thing that this movie needs. So you're going to direct this film. And... it's just, you know, when somebody has a head for the industry, you can really tell, because Spielberg's fingerprints are all over this thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even though he was busy doing Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which, I mean, was not the favorite out of his Indiana Jones movie, but still, it's Indiana Jones. It's going to be very popular. He was still, like, really hands-on in regards to, no, make Gizmo look like my dog.
Yes.
Oh, the other... Gremlins don't look right. You can't be that graphic. I mean, they could have went there, but at the same time, it was like, no, this is the type of movie where it's kind of hugging that line.
And they did, because, like we said, the original treatment for it, it would have, that would have been a very different movie.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been. So the scene in the kitchen would have seen Mom getting decapitated.
Yeah. And the dog being literally, instead of just being tortured by being hung by Christmas lights, it would have been eaten, too.
Right. And there was one of my favorite scenes that I actually kind of would like to... So you know how Burger King was all over it? One of the cut scenes would have taken place in a McDonald's.
Oh, yeah.
And except if the Gremlins wouldn't be chowing down on hamburgers, be chowing down on the patrons.
Yep.
Mm.
They cut out a lot in this movie. And, I mean, it's to the point where it's like, would you rather have it the way that it is, or would you rather see, like, the more graphic, gory parts in this movie?
I would like both. I want I would like a cut of both.
Because I was going to say, I am going to agree with Phil, because I wouldn't change the cut that we got. That's a very solid movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I still want to see the other stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like they would be able to, because there has been a lot of, like, rumors and pushing for either a reboot or whatever. I don't think they're ever going to do it.
They are.
Yeah.
So, in production already for HBO Max is a prequel animated series.
Yeah.
Gremlins 3 might eventually happen.
Yeah. But in regards to, like, if we went back and... Do you think it would have been able to, if we went a horror, like full-on horror R-rated, do you think it would be more successful during that time, or do you think it would be successful during this time? Because technology, obviously.
I think the, just call it what it is, the slasher cut of Gremlins would be more successful now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had, Gremlins came out as a family action movie with horror and comedy elements when tons of family action movies with horror and comedy elements were coming out and all of them were making a lot of money. So it's a product of its time, but it was also coming out when movies like it and Gremlins itself made bank.
Yep.
I think personally that if it came out in the 80s as just a horror movie, I think it would have been garnered more as a cult classic.
It definitely would.
I think it would be more in the camps of like, Sleepaway Camp and stuff like that. However, I think if it came out in the, even now, I think now might be a little bit better, but let's say five years ago, it would have been probably a forgettable movie that used too much CGI.
Yes.
And I only say that because we're coming back to the practical effects now. Yeah. We're in the second golden age of it.
Yeah.
Well, so
the practical effects are better now because they figured out the best way to do it is you make your animatronic as good as you can, and then when your animatronic doesn't stand up, you use minimal CGI to smooth out the rough edges, and then the movie looks amazing. Which is what we should have been doing all along.
Yeah.
No, what is CGI at all?
What are you talking about? That shark from Deep Blue Sea? Totally realistic.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I even just thought of it now would be if, because Asian countries, you get China, Japan, Korea, they are very good in regards to, like, you have J-horror. I mean, they have really good creature features. So it's like
Korea likes creature features.
Exactly. So I'm like, I feel like because of the origin of the, is it Mogwai?
Mogwai, yeah. They come from China.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like you could even have like a prequel that's made by a China company that I think like a collab between that would be awesome. And that way you kind of have the shots there and you could go hardcore with it.
Good.
I think that would be cool.
I don't know. It's interesting because it's what Warner Brothers and HBO have been doing lately. It's either real good or they're misstepping pretty hard.
Yeah.
Because the current state of the DCEU is a mess.
Yeah.
And the fact that everything that isn't already too far into production is canceled currently.
Mm-hmm.
But they've also had some really good series come out in the past few years.
Right.
And I'm hoping that just everything going on within Warner Brothers doesn't cancel the Welcome to Derry series.
Yeah.
Please don't do that. We actually want to see it.
We need more Pennywise.
Oh, and then let's go ahead and get into the cast. Because this is fun. So your leads are Zach Galligan and Phoebe Cates, pretty sure that they're both famous for being in Gremlins 1 and Gremlins 2.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Yeah. I mean, Zach, that was his, like, starring role. It was, like, really his, like, first. And then Phoebe Cates was, she was also in Fast Times.
And then
Drop Dead Fred.
Yeah,
Drop Dead Fred's more of a cult classic, though. Yeah. That one's not as, that one wasn't nearly as successful.
Yeah.
And then his dad was played by Hoyt Axton. His mom was Polly Holiday. You get... Who did Frances Lee... Oh, I'm wrong. Frances Lee McCain played mom. So who's Polly Holiday? Oh, that was mean old lady. What was her name? Mrs. Deagle.
Mrs. Deagle, yeah.
And Judge Reinhold shows up as Gerald. And then...
this is...
Oh, and weird enough, and so Corey Feldman's in this movie.
Yeah.
Because it's the mid-80s, so
yep.
Corey has to show up somewhere.
Yep.
And then, naturally, you know, Howie Mandel is Gizmo, and then Frank Welker, you know, Megatron.
Yep.
Well,
is Stripe.
Of course. Real quick.
A lot of cameos in this movie.
Ridiculous.
They were all, like, cameos, like, everybody.
Oh, yeah. So, real quick, though, going back a second, Zach Galligan. I wanted to look what his filmography is. His most recent... He's been prolific. He's been working... Yeah, I mean, he's... The most recent movie... I gave you this a few years ago, but the most recent movie he put out was in 2019.
Okay.
He's working on the Gremlins TV show.
Okay.
Yeah, like...
He hasn't really aged bad either, so
no.
that's good.
No, he hasn't. Not a lot of these movies are good. Mm. I'm not saying anything about that.
I'm talking about in regards to looks wise. I mean,
yeah.
he's going from a movie that was made in 84 to now, and he looks like he hasn't really aged today, which is good. So,
which is great because he's almost 60.
Right. So it's like, okay. But yeah, I guess because when we're looking, going to the backstory of this, because it was right on the back lots of Universal Studios.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they used the same filming set for Back to the Future,
right.
For
so,
the town.
So, yeah, for everybody who's a big film buff, if you love the Back to the Future town, you're wrong. It's not where it's from. It's the Back to the Future town features the city, the town from Gremlins, because that's how production works.
Mm-hmm.
What's it? There's a special name for that town. I don't remember because it's in a lot of movies.
Oh yeah, which I mean, again, it's like because we never really saw that town all in snow. So unless you're like a film buff, you're not going to really notice it.
Yeah.
So, but it's nice. But then it's like there was so many people in these movies, even in the second one. I mean, you have Christopher Lee. It's crazy.
All right. This one has a few cameos.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is made of cameos.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So for this one, you get Steven Spielberg. He rides a recumbent bike through one of the screens.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Goldsmith, who did the music, is the guy, one of the guys in the telephone booth.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Jones is the guy that Billy talks to in the bar about his comic book.
Who is like... a major Looney Tunes cartoonist.
The Looney Tunes cartoonist.
Yeah.
I mean, those are really the only big ones in this. There's only three big ones. And then there's, because I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know who Jim McCrell is.
I mean, William Shallert is, I think we're just not of the age to know who he is. Because he has a prolific TV career in things like The Twilight Zone and stuff of that nature.
Yeah. But either way, I mean, this was a movie where, I mean, it had a lot of people in it.
Well, and it actually had some pop culture cameos.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get one of my favorite background scene, or my favorite background scene in this is when his dad is at the invention convention.
Mm-hmm.
And in one scene when he's talking, you see H.G. Wells' time machine. And then in the next scene, it's gone. And they're investigating, trying to figure out where it went.
That's funny.
And then the robot, I want to say from it, it's like the War of the Worlds or something is in it.
Okay.
So yeah, it's... No, it's a very self-aware movie. It knows what it is. There's a lot of pop culture going on in this.
Yeah.
So that leads to a question of, does putting a lot of pop culture in your movie, does it age well?
Half the cameos didn't.
Fair enough.
There are six featured cameos. Out of those six people, three of them are truly significant in history. Like, I did not have to look them up. I know exactly who they are.
Right. Again, that's what it's marketed for. It's marketed as kind of like a family movie. So, or kind of, like a little bit. Because it's PG-13.
No, it's not.
Oh, PG.
This is PG.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
So, in regards to that, if you have kids, they're not... You can kind of... adults can kind of share this with their kids and be like, oh, you know who that is? Oh, you know who that is? So, and it's something where if you watch it, I didn't realize, like, all those people were in there as well. I didn't know that was Steven Spielberg. So it's like, okay. So it's something where you can kind of go fishing for Easter eggs.
Oh,
a
little
bit more
as time goes by and see how much... Even just like tiny little things when they're in the bar and he's showing the cartoon to the Looney Tunes cartoonist, they're playing the Looney Tunes on the TV in the background. So it's like tiny little things.
Wait,
like
it is tiny little things like that, because if you pay attention to one of the scenes, after a car gets crashed into the bar, do you know what that car is?
Mm.
It's a 71 Gremlin.
Because
of course it's a 71 Gremlin.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it be?
Yeah. And just like the tiny thing where I think it's the Burger King's next to the mortuary. It's just kind of like a little tiny funny thing. It's one of those films where you're like, oh, if you continue to watch this, you're going to notice things in the background. And that's cool because then it lasts longer. It's got longevity.
It does, because this movie is very, like you were saying, is extremely rewatchable. It's also very clever.
Yes.
But...
it's a lot of tongue-in-cheek.
Yes. But that's because when you put... because they put Joe Dante and Chris Columbus together, and those guys are what make this movie good. Because, yes, Steven Spielberg helped a lot, but when it actually comes to making the movie...
yeah. Mm-hmm. He put the right guys in the room together, but if the right guys didn't work together well...
then... right.
Yeah.
Well, and...
doesn't matter.
Like Shelby was saying, Joe Dante has been courted on. He's like, glad that Steve was part of this project. Also glad he was busy for the majority of shooting, because it meant that I got to shoot the movie that I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have the more experienced director over my shoulder.
Right. I mean, he'll come in and put his two cents in, but then it was mainly Joe kind of just doing his thing. So that's always nice. Because then it would be like, no, this is Steven's movie, and I'm just here.
Which has happened, and whenever you have that much interference, it usually pumps out something real bad.
Yeah. Or it's like, that's obviously, you can see that this was two people's movies, and they tried to mix it as much as they could, and you can tell. Because it's not straight line. It's bumpy.
Justice League.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's very jagged.
Oh, God.
Truth bombs.
Well, if you want that movie to work, you just gotta watch the 4-hour, 5-hour, 6-hour version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Preferably in black and white.
Well, yeah.
Because it has to be stylized.
Well, come on. Zack Snyder's Captain Pretentious. We all knew that, though. Anyway, back to the actual movie we're talking about.
I guess we can go over just key points in the plot.
Sure. So, it bookends with narration from...
The father. Randall Peltzer.
Thank you. I was looking for the name.
Yeah. He is a struggling inventor, and he's going through Chinatown trying to find a present for his son, Billy, played by Zach.
And, well, his thing was twofold, because he wanted to find a curio shop, which he finally did. And so, naturally... the first thing he does is he pretends to browse the shop.
Yeah.
And once he feels that he's looked at enough stuff, he immediately just beelines for the owner and tries to sell him his bathroom buddy, which is
like a bunch of crap. Yeah, like a Swiss
just
Army knife.
Slapped onto a plastic brick.
It's like a Swiss Army knife for your bathroom.
It's a Swiss Army shower.
His all of his inventions. I feel like I was watching like Honey We Shrunk the Kids while watching, with all his inventions, because just like they don't work, but yet the wife is so supportive.
He is obviously successful enough.
Yeah.
Because that's not a small house,
mm-hmm.
and that was the mid '80s. So people were losing their homes at that point in history. So he was doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah. And he pretty much steals the Magua.
Well, yeah, because, okay.
He pays them.
He does. So the shop owner's grandson, his jaw hits the floor once dad starts haggling. He's like, look, this thing's cute. It's obviously intelligent. It'll be a great pet for my son.
Which, you know, he already has a dog.
Okay, fine. The movie has to move the plot. I'm not mad at it. And so the kid sneaks the Magua out into the alleyway and takes $200 because grandpa needs the money.
Yep. And quickly, I mean, luckily this is something that they didn't branch over, and this is something that the rules of the Magua.
Yes.
It's like, okay, they kind of threw that in there at the last second. And go ahead, Phil.
I have an issue with the rules. One specific rule.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the big one. Don't feed them after midnight.
So
when
that
do
is,
you get to feed them then? Never. When does that start?
And that's the thing that a lot of people talk about, but at the same time, when this movie came out, nobody cared.
No, of course not.
So it is something, yes, we now focus on, because it's like, wait a minute, when is midnight?
Yeah, which
does
midnight?
Does it go off of the time zone that they are located in? Like, what are we talking about
or
here?
Or is it from their native time zone?
Exactly.
So do I have to know when it's midnight in a certain province
it
in China?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
But, okay, so.
You're right.
This is a black comedy movie from the 80s. Who cares?
Right. All right, so anyway, since we started at rule three, let's go ahead and backtrack to rule number one. They hate bright light and sunlight will kill them. You can't get it wet. Don't feed them after midnight.
Mm-hmm. And okay. I mean, the father listens to the rules, tells his son, and his son he's a teenager. He's young adult.
He is either a senior in high school or 21.
Yeah, he's probably a senior in high school. He's working for the bank and not really.
But he also hangs out at the local bar,
yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah,
I don't.
It's because she's there. That's
I understand
why.
That.
Yeah. But, yeah. He just wants to focus on his comic books and stuff like that, kind of acting, trying to not quite let go of his childhood a little bit. Mm. And he loves the Magua. I mean, we see Gizmo. He is the Magua. He is
a
little...
Magwai.
Magwai, sorry. He is like a Furby. That's what he looks like.
Oh, Furby definitely ripped their design off.
Yeah,
no, I was talking to Taylor about it because we watched it together, and she was there looking at it going, is that just a Furby?
Yeah.
No, Furby came out long after.
Yeah.
Furby originally came out in either
98.
Really?
Yes.
Dang.
I looked it up.
14 years afterwards.
Yeah, the only difference is that Furbies don't have legs and they don't have arms. So it's
they don't turn into demon creatures.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
They already are.
You're right. You're right.
Furbies are haunting. Yeah, they're haunted a little bit. You got whatever is it, Corey Feldman's character.
Yes, Corey Feldman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awkward.
Pete Fontaine, who's the requisite child friend of your teenage protagonist that seemed to exist in these movies.
Yeah. And they're real chill, and things start
they
to happen.
What probably happened is Pete lives in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and Billy hangs out with him from time to time. I'm sure Billy
This is obviously a small town,
right?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, makes sense. So
it's a small town located in a back lot.
Yeah, small town. Exactly.
It's a small town in nondescript California. It's fine. Let's move on.
Right. And
nothing changes.
Yeah, so he gives them gets his early Christmas present.
Yeah.
He loves it. Gizmo's so cute. He's adorable. And even just the entire behind the scenes, all the cast and crew they thought that he was so adorable, and his character had to change several times in regards to what they were gonna do with Gizmo.
Right,
because they were like, no, he's too precious. He's too pure. We can't make him evil.
Well, the thing was never to make him evil. Actually, a lot of the original ideas for Gizmo ended up happening in the second movie, mm-hmm. because they, what the plan was, they were going to make Gizmo to just straight up hero of the movie. He was going to have a lot more action scenes, which, like I said, happened in the sequel. But part of the problem with the first movie was the scale that you see all of the animatronics at. They broke a lot because they were small. The bigger your animatronic, the easier it is to repair it because you can actually get at the components.
Yeah.
So they tried to, or somebody tried to talk Joe Dante into having a big one built so they could do close-ups and stuff. And he was like, it'll be ugly. It'll be weird. We have to keep him small so he stays cute. And so that ended up putting the nicks on a lot of what they wanted to do. And then 6 years later, when technology improved, they were able to do it.
Right. And a lot of things that they did, a lot of shots with Gizmo are just him stand or sitting there. I mean, didn't really, he was being carried around or him in a backpack. So it was just like, oh, you don't need to see what is underneath of him. So it was fine. And also made him more cute because it's like, oh, you have to carry him around like a little baby.
Well, yeah. And then, yeah. I mean, like you said, with the story changes, though, if you pay attention to it, Gizmo's a main character for the first half of the movie, and then he disappears for most of the second part. For the second act.
Right, and then he helps to save the day at the end.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay. it's yeah, you could definitely tell that they were kind of like, crap, what do we... Oh, we have to bring back Gizmo. Whoops.
Oh. Oopsie doopsie.
Yeah. So, slowly things like... Obviously, like they accidentally spill water on Gizmo, well, and then he starts to multiply.
Okay, yeah, we get the first thing that happens though is as soon as he opens it, Mom takes a flash photo of Gizmo, and he freaks out. So, yeah. Oh, bright light! I'm like, okay, cool, no bright lights. And then he gets a couple water spilled on his back, and spits out five more Mogwai.
Yep.
Except something's different.
Yeah.
They are.
Yep. They're mean.
It bites Corey.
Yep. Oh, was it Stripe?
Yep.
It's got the Mohawk, so he's obviously the leader. And they all have their different personalities. You got one that's like super, super like goofy, big eyeballs, very crazy, lot laughing and stuff like that.
So and one of them's just bigger than the other ones.
Yeah. It's just like they all are different. And it really shows the technology at the time. And it's like, oh, you're able to not only make these things look cool and not look like styrofoam and really crappy looking, you're actually able to make them all have different personalities from when they're in their fuzzy state, but also when they're in their evil state too.
Yep.
So it flows. It's good work.
Yep.
And I think it was when they go full on evil is...
That's when what Billy does is he looks at the clock and it's like 15 minutes before midnight. They're hungry. They're asking for food. So he goes and grabs
chicken,
whole plate of chicken, puts it in there, asks Gizmo if he wants some, pulls one out. Gizmo says, nah, good, nah. As he's just sitting there reading some comic book with his glasses.
Yeah.
It's great. And then he falls asleep. Billy falls asleep, wakes up, and he finds that they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at the clock, and it's still 15 minutes before midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the Mogwais chewed through the power cable of his clock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, they're not gone. They're all in big, nasty-looking cocoons that look like they could have been an alien.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right, yeah.
They could have been. But even at this point, I mean, they have done some, like, have they hurt the dog yet?
Yes.
Yes, the Mogwai hurt the dog.
Yeah.
And then Billy takes one of them to his high school science teacher. What is going on with this guy? Because he takes this unknown animal, says, yeah, I'll take him. I'll run some blood tests and some other tests on him. You're a biology teacher. What tests are you running on anything?
I want to know
tests do you have access to?
I want
to
know his backstory.
What are you doing?
I won't be surprised he worked for, like, the NSA or the FBI or freaking NASA, and he was doing some sketchy crap, and he got in trouble, so now he's teaching biology in high school.
The NSA wouldn't have existed by then.
It's true. It
wouldn't have.
So, either way, so probably...
NASA.
NASA.
But So yeah, instead of going to, you know, a veterinarian or, I don't know, a biology department at a university that's actually stocked with things, mm-hmm. he runs whatever tests he runs out of his classroom, mm-hmm. works till 2 a.m. By the way, Billy was responsible. Billy told him all of the rules. So naturally, right before he leaves the school for the night, he leaves a sandwich directly next to the Mogwai cage.
Yeah. And as he is being...
What could go wrong?
...attacked as well, he doesn't turn the lights on.
Quit. Jump at... Let stuff happen, Shelby.
It's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
He comes back the next morning, and he's got a cocoon in the cage. Mm. And so... Then they run forward, and for whatever reason, in 1983, because that's when the movie was shot, they're watching a nature documentary from either the late 50s or early 60s, because as you do.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The cage starts to rattle. And at the same time, at Billy's house, his mom's downstairs cooking, and it sounds like her attic is about to explode.
Aww.
And then the gremlins hatch.
Yeah.
And... Yeah, and then we get the scene in the classroom, which is
all of the strengths.
Yeah.
Because yeah, he wanders around in the dark,
mm-hmm.
following all the noises. When again, this is supposed to be a smart guy. He's run these unknown science mm-hmm. tests on this Mogwai. He should apparently be wise enough to turn on the gigantic fluorescent lights in his classroom.
Right.
Yeah. Why are you walking around in the dark? You have the technology. Use it.
Nope.
Click.
Nope.
I have a fear of switches. Can't use them.
I can't do it.
Can't.
Saving electricity for some reason.
Yeah.
This is the 80s. They don't care.
But it's just like, but this is also, his death scene was actually supposed to be a lot more graphic. It was again another scene.
He was supposed to be like ripped apart.
Yeah. He was also supposed to have like not just a... And one of needle, hypodermic needle
in his butt.
But he was supposed to have him like all over himself. And it was just like, okay, another thing that they kind of cut out and made it more comedic. So we have our first victim. And then it's just, the gremlins just go crazy. I mean, it's.
So eventually, what? Yeah, Billy gets the better of the one in the school.
Mm-hmm.
It's mom. Is a beast and murders four gremlins in her kitchen.
Thanks to the invention, the inventions too.
Oh yeah.
I love the scene though when they go to the YMCA.
Right. So at this point, yeah. So Stripe escapes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we get a little bit of inconsistencies with the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Because Stripe jumps through the window into the snow and doesn't immediately start multiplying.
It's not water.
Yeah, it is.
It's not water. It's snow. Those are completely different words.
Exactly. But I like this scene because it's like, oh, this is very comedic to this point. And then Stripe goes into the swimming pool and you have that scene where Billy's like slowly backing away. The water starts boiling. You have like the sound of the Mogwai, and it's like that. It's like that weird cat sound. The water's turning green. Fog's
and
coming.
And they got
in.
Like disco lights going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. And it's like, oh crap, I messed up. Like it's like, oh yeah, it's about to go down, and then it's just mayhem.
Right. Because at this point, you have hundreds
yes.
of gremlins.
I absolutely love the scene where they take over the bar.
Oh, yeah.
And you have just drastic different, like, generic bar personalities there.
Yeah.
Like the
like the
mobster
yeah.
in the corner drinking by himself.
Yeah. Also, another thing. Why doesn't the alcohol make them mutate?
I told you it's not water.
Yeah.
It's not just water.
It's a whole different word.
Yep. And Kate is just sitting there, and she's just ordering.
She's serving it up.
She's serving it up. I mean,
she's... No, eating. She's terrified. She's going, ah.
Here you go. Here, I'll light this for you.
And they don't want the cigarettes lit. They just want to have them in their mouth.
Well, but that's when she figures out they're afraid of the light. She's smart. She's paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then she grabs her there's a Polaroid camera behind the thing. And she bam, 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 and is able to escape the bar, which is a cool scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really enjoyed that scene.
And can we give the cops in this movie potentially the most useless police force in all of movie history?
Yeah.
Period. If the second the YMCA thing goes down, Billy does what all responsible kids are told to do. Go to the police. Except the police are drunk and they're only interested in laughing at you. Because that's what the sheriff's job apparently is.
He was elected for that job, too.
Yeah.
The people thought he was the best at drinking and laughing at you.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Even if they even as they show him Gizmo, it's like, we don't believe you.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. It's, hey, look, here's an animal you've literally never seen before.
That's a cat. That's a gerbil. That's a mutated bunny rabbit.
Look here. Take your ugly dog and go home.
Right.
That's a cute not dog. Thank you.
There is like this one movie that they also spoof in the second movie as well. I mean, the second movie is a spoof itself. And when Kate tells her "I hate Christmas" story, like and it's like, okay, we're getting a little dark.
Why I hate, the "Why I Hate President's Day" story in the second movie.
Yeah, it's just like, okay. Or it was like Lincoln Day or something.
President's Day. Yeah.
And it's just like, I like how it's shot, but then it's like, are we supposed to be taking this serious? And then, it's like we get to, we see all the mayhem. I mean, we see Mrs. Deagle, like she gets
killed.
Yeah, she gets launched through her window.
Because Mrs. Deagle is she owns the real estate company that owns every building in town, basically. But so she's your evil cat lady for this. And the gremlin messes with, because she's old, so she can't climb her stairs. So she's got that chair.
Yeah.
And so the gremlin messes with her stair lift. And the second she gets in it, she goes up those stairs 30, 40 miles per hour and out that second story window. That's all she wrote. I'm going to say Mrs. Deagle dies a fairly horrific death if you think about it.
Yeah.
Do you know how you fix that? We don't think about it. Move on.
And they do.
That's what the movie does.
Okay, I'm going to backtrack for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
When Billy finds his favorite teacher murdered in his classroom, Billy leaves the classroom and we never talk about the teacher again. Yep. Well,
fix it.
One of the biggest role models in my life just died. I'm leaving.
Fix it the Irish way. You push it real far down, and then one day you die. In the words of John Mulaney.
Yep. And I mean, even though yes, we are seeing all this chaos, just like so much destruction, so much property is being destroyed, and then all of a sudden it gets very, very quiet, and they find that all the gremlins are watching Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
That's right.
In the local theater, and they're just having a great time. I saw a spoof of this scene where it was like the theater scene from Inglourious Basterds. All of a sudden, it's the Jewish lady. She's like, "Yes, you're all going to die in here." I thought it was very funny.
Oh, that's great. That's absolutely great.
People coming out with Tommy guns and just killing.
So once they do that, Billy and Kate sneak down in the mechanical room, and they knock a gas pipe loose, and Billy stuffs a rag under the door and lights it. As someone who goes into mechanical rooms and stuff quite often, I want to let you know that if this movie were realistic, Billy and Kate and Gizmo all died in a tragic blowing up a theater accident.
Yeah. As we saw in the previous scene that the gremlins were all smoking, you know that they were probably smoking in that theater.
No, I'm just saying there's no way they
get out.
He stuffed the door properly.
Yeah.
Because gas isn't gasoline. The movie does have some logic problems, but it's fine.
We'll get over it.
It's a it's a, like you said, it's a black comedy from the 80s. Deal with it. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Well, yeah, then
the almost all the gremlins die.
Yep.
Except for two.
Well.
Gizmo's still technically a gremlin.
Boy. Well, technically they're all Mogwai.
Fair enough.
The neighbor calls them gremlins. Or just, he just says the word gremlin in like one scene like five
because
times.
Because he's a WW2 vet and he hates everything foreign.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his personality.
Yep. And
they go
to the department store.
Yeah, we go to Montgomery Ward.
Yep. Go to the department store, and as Stripe tries to go into the fountain, because he's like, I need my army back, pretty much, that's when Gizmo comes to save the day.
Now, I have a question about that scene.
Yeah.
So we see this really cute scene where Gizmo gets to drive what looks like a Barbie sports car through the department store.
Mm-hmm.
And he ramps off of a snow shovel and ends up saving the day. So this car has gears and pedals and an active steering wheel and
a combustion engine.
It's just there's a lot going on with this because he backs up.
Gizmo's cute. That's all you need to worry about.
I know.
Either we love this movie anyway.
we're nitpicking because it's who we are.
Yes.
But no, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie.
Yes. And he is able to he opens up the skylight and kills Stripe.
In the most gruesome bit of effects work. Mm-hmm. Stripe terrifying at the end when he's just a skeleton.
Yeah, he's just like, you got this melting scene. I mean, it's kind
of... falls into the water.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Just like that, you know what it kind of also reminds me of? It reminds me of like the melting scene in Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
It also reminds me of the end of Raiders.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, it reminded me of a much better version of the Evil Dead's ending.
Mm, okay.
Where everyone is melting away.
Mm. Yeah.
But better, much better.
Yeah.
So, the next day, the local news is reporting on the Christmas Eve Massacre.
Yeah.
It's literally what they call it. And the secondary news story running that day is how Mrs. Teagle... with some mortgage fraud, which I thought was hilarious.
That's great.
Whoopsie.
But no, and then who comes back? Grandpa from the beginning of the movie, Mr. Yeah. Wing, shows up and he's like, all right, what's wrong with all you Westerners? Don't respect anything because you just treated him like you treat the planet. You just do whatever you want with it and you ruin everything. Yep. I'm taking him back.
You're not ready, you're not responsible enough to take care of him.
And he looks at Billy and says, one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, one day, and...
Oh, just... and he gives the $200 back.
Yeah.
Hey, at least, yeah.
Hey, full refund.
It was a full refund.
That's a good returns policy.
You're right, if...
He comes, gives you the money and picks it up, oh, that's a fantastic returns policy.
Mr. Wing for the win.
Right.
In regards to his return policies.
There's only one issue with Mr. Wing's return policy. Three or four people have to die.
Yeah.
Minor details. Yeah. Minor details.
It's fine. It's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And the
movie ends, and I guess the...
Yeah, Mr. Wing.
The Peltzer family have Christmas, along with Kate, because I guess... her family's dead now.
Yeah, could be. We don't know anything about her mom.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we missed... Okay, so one of the more famous scenes in this movie is Kate's How I Learned Santa Wasn't Real story.
Oh, I mentioned a little bit about that.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But we didn't...
go into detail
about... You mentioned
about...
the spoof from the sequel.
But the actual speech is effective because it's very depressing.
Yeah.
So it's... it's Christmas Eve, and Dad was working late, and Mom called the office, and no one was there. And a day goes by, and we're worried out of our mind, and the police are looking for him. And 2 days go by. 3 days go by. 4 days go by. On the fifth day, I try to light the fireplace, and I notice the smell. And the fire department comes out, and they get the cap off of the chimney. And there's my father. He was trying to come down the chimney in a Santa Claus outfit. He had a sack full of toys. He fell and broke his neck. And that was the day that I learned Santa Claus wasn't real. I was 9 years old. It's like, okay, movie.
Okay. And Billy's just like, okay.
What do you do with that? I don't
know. It's like, okay.
Movie does the same thing it does with all tragic things. And we're moving on.
Let's forget about that.
Yeah, the movie definitely is one of those be like, you know, that emotional pain. Pack it down. Get a nice, tight little ball. All right, and you swallow that ball, and you just shove it all the way down in your stomach, and you forget about it.
And you move on. Because that's what we're doing.
Compartmentalize. Let's go.
Totally healthy way of dealing with trauma. It's fun.
Yeah.
Now, for our all-important question, is this scary? Not at all, but that's not remotely important for this movie.
Yeah. This movie, it's a fun movie. It is something where, yes, you can. It's got rewatchability to it. And again, it's one of those movies where you can introduce this to your young horror fans to get them into horror.
You can watch this with your kids. My 2-year-old was in the room the entire time it was on. There were a few scenes that freaked her out. But overall, she was able to watch this movie and enjoy it.
Yeah.
So you can show this to your young kids.
Mm-hmm. And the Christmas element to it, because it's like, there. Okay, it's there. I mean,
it takes place on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. And you get the aspect of, like, the snow, and which I like the snow in comparison to, like, the snow effects in Krampus
that we just
watched. I like this a lot better because it almost felt like I was watching, like, this would be, like, a Midwestern town. Like, or it was just like, this is going to be a town where they get snow.
Right, and what's interesting about that is this was shot in spring.
Yeah.
So it's all spray-on foam, basically.
Yeah, I saw, honestly, a lot of problems with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, how'd you get snow on the underside of your branches?
You didn't want to get a ladder and spray it on the tops.
Yeah.
I understand. I'm just saying.
But it looked kind of, and they spent a good chunk of time outside, and I was like, okay. I was like, I kind of like this. So I was like, it kind of looks cold outside. So it works. And
It works fine. Yeah. No problem.
Yeah. And they did a lot of Christmas elements. I like the moment where all the bad Mogwais are like playing with the games and stuff like that, and you just have cute little Gizmo sitting by the dog underneath the tree, just being so adorable,
playing with some tinsel,
playing with just being like super adorable. Like, oh, I want one.
Right. Oh,
I had Furbies.
They made so much money in merchandising on this movie.
Absolutely.
Gizmo sold like hotcakes.
Oh yeah.
So question. Am I the only one that you saying this was filmed in spring made me think of this? Am I the only one that when it's not Christmas time and I'm surrounded by, like, Christmassy kind of things, it's ever so slightly off-putting? Like, this isn't right.
Then you wouldn't have liked when this movie came out.
June.
Oh, it was a summer release.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's just, it's a weird thing I feel. This isn't the place for it. I don't understand.
I don't have a huge issue with it, but I also am usually not surrounded by a bunch of Christmas stuff.
Mm.
That time of year. Actually, in fact, in my office, where we're currently sitting, there are zero Christmas things
Except for your mug.
That doesn't count. That's not
going to be in here. Yeah, there's nothing Christmas
in here. I still have my Halloween skull up, though. You betcha. But that stays up year-round.
Yeah.
I don't put that away. But yeah, I mean, it's. I think it also depends on your personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fair.
Some family friends of ours love Christmas, and Christmas gets mentioned year round, and that doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
But
no.
Yeah, I don't know if I was going to do like a production or something like that. Because, well, here's the thing, most Christmas movies are shot in the spring and summer because you have to have them ready. For winter.
Yeah. No, I get that.
I mean, you can release them in November or whatever, and they would still work. Yeah. But yeah, if you're blatantly either releasing a movie that has to do with Christmas or has a lot of Christmas elements to it,
then you want that early December release.
Exactly. Yeah. Because if you even release it in September, October, it's going to feel weird.
It's too early.
It's way too early.
Yeah, because that's, you're right. I think that sweet spot is like second to last, mm-hmm. is, there's a 3-week spot that I would say would be good for that. It's the last 2 weeks of November and the first one in December. That's when you release your Christmas movie.
Absolutely.
Because then you get a lot of traction out of it. And I mean, people will watch a Christmas movie into February.
Oh, yeah.
Because what else are you doing with your life? The world's frozen.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great time to go to the movie theater. And Christmas makes you feel good. And it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
True. True.
Yeah.
But, yeah, overall, I would say this is definitely a watch it, buy it, whatever kind of super positive recommendation you want. I would say this, and if you like this movie, go watch the sequel. It's, this movie turned up to 11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people like the sequel more. Actually, I've met some people that hate the sequel, which I don't understand, but...
It's definitely zanier. It's definitely a different feel because, I mean, obviously you got this one that's got, like, Christmas. It's in the town. The other one is in a, it's like, in a skyscraper.
Yeah.
So
in a super technologically advanced skyscraper.
Mm-hmm. So it definitely has that different scenario. I kind of like the second one in regards to the location because I think they even, like, spoof, like, Die Hard.
They spoof a lot of, well... I kind of like the second movie better because you also get the different types of gremlin.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting.
And also the gremlins get mutated on top of that because they're also in a scientific lab. And I like how Stripe drinks that antidote that turns him to like a mutant spider character. So it's kind of like,
I mean.
Yeah, so it's like cool that they change.
Well, and they're also... They use that advanced equipment, and you get some super intelligent gremlins, and just, like, they go with a bunch of different personalities and stuff, and they break the fourth wall.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do gremlins too later.
Yeah.
We don't need to double review.
We can do more here. Creature features. I feel like we haven't really focused on any of those yet, but that's coming soon.
Yeah.
We'll do a creatures features month at some point.
Yeah. And then, This being the Christmas episode, is probably going to be the last episode 2022.
Yes.
And what we're wanting to do is, because we looked at our time frame, and we started our first, the intro episode came out at the end of 2019, so kind of sort of counts, not really. But January was like our first official, we talked about a specific topic, and we're, for our 2-year anniversary. We're not going to tell you what movie it is until we get there. We've definitely mentioned it. So if you want to know, go back and figure it out. But the genesis for the idea, we're going to talk about the movie that sparked the podcast, finally.
Yes.
And it's a movie.
It was, oh, is it on film?
Okay. We'll get there. But to go into horror news real quick, got a couple things. Five Nights at Freddy's movie, Matthew Lillard and Josh Hutcherson join the cast.
I just don't care.
If you like that, I have something else you just don't care about.
My thing is, I get that Five Nights at Freddy's is popular.
It's
just a weird time to finally make a movie because Five Nights at Freddy's was more popular 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So. And the most recent game wasn't as popular as they were hoping to be. So, and also, is it going to work when it's not a video game? I don't think so. I feel like it is not.
Just because the franchise was once ultra popular, they keep trying to inject it with new blood, and that doesn't always work.
Yeah.
So, M. Night Shyamalan has released a new trailer.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Knock at the Cabin. I'm going to be real here.
No. Is that the one with Dave Bautista in it?
Dave Bautista? Yes.
Okay.
It's directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Yes. Dave Bautista is an actor, former wrestler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. No, I
also has Rupert Grint in it.
It does. I actually saw that trailer looked like a lot of fun.
I saw it today. It makes me feel bad because I hope it's good. It looks good. I have no faith in M. Night Shyamalan.
Well, no, because his most recent movie was Old, and it was a great example of him taking a super interesting idea and making a really boring movie out of it.
There's no better way to put it.
And good segue. Speaking of wrestlers, guess what? Other wrestler is going to be in another horror movie.
Who's that?
Chris Jericho.
Oh, is he?
Yes, it's called Dark Match. It is going to be a wrestling-themed horror movie.
I have to watch this.
I did not know that Chris Jericho was in Terrifier 2.
Mm.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
So pretty much the basic synopsis is a small-time wrestling company accepts a high-paying gig in a backwoods town, only discover when they arrive that the community is run by a mysterious cult leader with devious plans for their match. I kind of want to watch this. That's going to be a cage match from hell.
And Jericho's an executive producer.
Oh,
for it.
No.
Yeah. And naturally, you know what low budget horror means, don't you?
What?
Going back to Canada, baby.
Woo!
They shot it in Edmonton. So, yeah.
Oh, we're going back to Canada. I feel like we haven't been in Canada for a while. The new Scream trailer has been released. I saw the teaser. I mean, it's going to be different. I mean, we're going to New York City. Okay. That'll be interesting. But we'll see. I mean, the release going to be next year. Mm-hmm. Jenna Ortega, who's been very, very successful in a very short period of time, she's going to be reprising her role as well as the little sister. So we'll see what happens.
So the next Fear Street has a director now.
Woo-hoo!
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's Chloe Okuno.
Okay, so there's
from VHS 99 and Storm Drain. And she also directed The Watcher.
Okay. Which is supposedly very successful. I haven't watched it on Netflix yet, though.
Oh, it was good. So
I'll have to check that out. I haven't seen it either. So I don't know if this is exactly horror, but I mentioned what was going on with Warner Brothers earlier. So this ties into that. So let's do a little recap on Henry Cavill right now, because this is how we get to this article. Yep. So Henry Cavill was playing Geralt in The Witcher, a role that he left to go return to Superman. And then they canceled the current version of the DCEU. So Henry, being the enterprising geek that he is,
that is the best way to, he's the king of the geeks. He's the king of the nerds.
And I say that with lots of respect because I love the thing that he's announced now. Henry Cavill just went and pitched Amazon a Warhammer 40K series. He's like, and I'm gonna be the executive producer and the lead actor. I'm in. Let's do it. I want Space Marine Henry Cavill. Because if he's anything but a Space Marine, they wasted him.
It's the grim dark.
The Rings of Power may not have been the best series ever. With Amazon money behind a 40K series, it's going to look amazing.
Oh, it's going to be so good. It's going to be so dark.
The nerdgasms.
I'm ready.
I love it, though.
I heard about this, but I didn't realize he pitched it. I didn't know that. Mm. Oh, gosh.
Well, because all of a sudden, he's like, okay, I don't like the direction y'all are going with The Witcher. None of you care about the source material. I'm having fights with you guys over canon at every taping right now. So I can't deal with that anymore, so I'm going to leave. I've also been invited back to Superman until James Gunn just comes out and goes, oh, hey, by the way, I don't know how to fix the current version. We're starting over. We're hitting the hard reset button. Okay? And so Henry's just like, well, I need a job. I'm going to go make a job.
He's got his ace.
There's
so
let's be real here. The Horse Heresy has like 30 to 40 books in it to begin with. I guarantee you this is going to be so lore packed. It's going to be so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. So Amazon, MGM, Henry Cavill, Vertigo Entertainment, and Games Workshop. I'm just saying, it's like,
do you know anyone that holds on to their product that hard? No. Sorry.
I mean, that, again, but that also shows that he's going to be he's being smart about it. He's like, I'm collabing with a lot of big people. And I'm also, since I'm in the seat in regards to creative whatever, it's, I'm going to try to be as canon as possible.
Because he's that kind of nerd.
He's that type of person.
I understand. I think he's one of those, he's going to go at this with, I understand there are going to be differences, but they're going to be differences that make sense for the medium. And we're not going to ignore things just because we don't quote unquote like it.
Right.
Or not like it.
I agree.
So I know we spent a lot of time talking about that, but that one looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah.
I'm so excited.
The Exorcist reboot halts production.
Oh.
It will hopefully resume early next year, but we'll see. Also, going back to R.L. Stine, looks like he's going to be doing a Christmas trilogy for Fort Fear Street as well.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yep, it's called Silent Night. So we got a Christmas trilogy coming to Fear Street as well. So
that'll be like 2024, 2025.
Probably, yeah. So then we'll have like maybe a Christmas release for that instead for like fall time. So that'll be cool. It'd be something different because the Fear Street in itself, the series of books is just so vast. And it's, you can go really any way with it. You don't have to make it Halloweenish. You can make it whatever, because it's set during so many different times. So I think that'll be cool.
And then for anybody who's a big Hideo Kojima fan, they're apparently making a Death Stranding movie for reasons.
They exist.
I'm not interested.
No one here can bring up those reasons.
I watched a bunch of gameplay for Death Stranding, and I did zero things. Maybe you want to play that game. There's another game coming out, which I'm probably also not going to play. So, there's that.
And then, I guess going into the new year, again, we are planning on doing our Wes Craven month. But we'll hopefully going to try to get 3 movies in there for that month. And then we'll start going back to some of our other episodes, our other series that we were doing. Probably the comic book one for Lock and Key. And maybe even touch on some more different ones as well. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the plan.
All right.
So, Merry Christmas, everybody. Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christ.
Yeah, Christmas. Merry Christmas. And let us know, communicate with us. We would love to talk to you on the socials. And let us know what you guys going to be watching or reading.
But, this is Zach.
This is Shelby.
This is Phil.
Stay spooky.